Hey, clones, do you want to take this weekend to the next level? Check out Fan Exchange and grab some ducats to a game, a concert, or a theater event. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed, no getting to the gate and worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Fan Exchange, promo code ROME.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
There's no way for me to cover that entire game in the open, but I do want to set a few things up. In fact, let me start by asking you, how was your night? What did you get up to last night? And the reason I ask, I need to know whether or not you saw game one of the NBA Finals, or were you just not that into seeing these two teams play again? Were you sticking to your hot take and your lava that the Warriors are so bad for the NBA, that you've already seen this movie three times before, and that you had better things to do? That anything would be better than having to see Golden State and Cleveland run it back a fourth time? Because if you were spewing all that lava and you did find something else to do last night, then you missed one of the best things ever. One of the best things ever. J.R. Smith doing one of the most J.R. Smith things ever on the biggest stage imaginable and blowing a chance to steal a game, rip home court, and actually give his team a legitimate chance in the series. Instead, JR implodes, wasting one of the greatest nights ever by one of the game's best to ever do it, and instead of winning, they end up getting smacked in OT, 124-114. In other words, not bad for a game that all you lava aficionados swore that you would never ever watch. Not only was it not bad, it was absolutely incredible. There were so many different elements that I could do 6 hours of show on that game alone. I mean, that game was so good that LeBron showing up for the game in a suit with shorts, Angus Young style, was forgotten by the time the game was over. An incredible look, by the way. An amazing look. JaVale McGee, as an example, comes out of nowhere. He was an absolute monster in the third quarter, guarding everybody on the floor, wreaking havoc, and even he was an afterthought by the time that game was over. Because the fourth quarter was one for the ages. It was so good. There are a couple of things that I'm going to have to put a pin in and just get back to them later on. You know, like the play of one Earl Joseph J.R. Smith III, the play of LeBron Raymond James Sr., both so epic they get their own takes. I mean, I can't even cover the whole game in this take. I can't get to Klay Thompson looking like he had his legs snapped off by J.R. Smith in the first quarter and then coming back to play 45 minutes and score 24. I don't even have time to discuss Steph Curry's epic shot at the end of the first half. And I can't get into the fact that JaVale legitimately was a massive force in that third quarter. Even skipping over all that, I still have no space right here to lay out that Larry Nance Jr. was huge for Cleveland. Or that Twitter roasted Jordan Clarkson again. Or that the Cavs played a nearly perfect game. That they were standing in the center of the ring, trading haymakers with the Warriors, and they were completely unafraid. I could spend an entire hour on the final minute of regulation alone. You've got LeBron's three-point play with 50.8 seconds left that gave them a 104-102 lead. You've got Kevin Durant going to respond but being called for a charge on LeBron. Or was he? Well, he was, but then the officials met, they reviewed it, they changed it to a blocking foul. And on that point, I understand the explanation for why they were allowed to review it, because they thought LeBron might have had a foot in the restricted area, which he didn't. He was nowhere close. And I won't disagree with you if you want to argue that they ultimately got the call right and it should have been a blocking foul all along. All of that said, I completely understand why the Cavs were so pissed. I would have been too. Because in the final minute of that game, you reviewed a call for a particular reason, and then you reversed the call for a completely different reason. I would have been pissed. I would have been raging. And apparently after the game, the Cavs were. Dave McMenamin tweeted, quote, four words I've heard more than once being muttered under Cleveland's personnel's breath in the Cavs postgame locker room, Ken Maurer bleeped us. Now, normally I would say that complaining about the refs is weak, but Ken Maurer bleeped us is a strong line. And I'm having a tough time disagreeing with that. I mean, it doesn't mean that there weren't other factors in the loss. I'll get to that. But trust me, the refs made sure that everybody knew that they were in that house last night.
Durant to the top of the key to the foul line. Down the lane, ran over to LeBron. And what do we have? It's an offensive foul. Ken Maurer took a lot of time making the call. He took a look out at Tony Brothers, who was near midcourt. It looked like Tony was going to make an indication. That's why Maurer hesitated. But LeBron James draws the foul. And now a discussion will take place on the replay.
Call on the floor as an overturn. Personal foul, LeBron James.
That stings. So now with 36 seconds remaining, it turns into a situation where with the original call, it had been Cavalier basketball. Now, however, Durant, with these 36 seconds remaining, has a chance to tie the ball game.
Cavs radio. Notice how we picked up that exclusive audio. Did you hear LeBron's reaction when they reviewed it? Alvin, that is well done. You could hear the mics on the floor, and they ultimately pick up everything, right? Listen to LeBron's reaction when he heard that they reviewed it and then overruled it.
On the replay.
Calling the floor as an overturn.
Listen.
Personal foul. LeBron.
Wait for it.
Oh,
dude, he was mad. He was mad. Wouldn't we all react like that? I understand why he was pissed. Hey, Alvin. How pissed was he? Let me hear that one more time.
On the replay.
Call on the floor as an overturn. Personal foul, LeBron James.
Wow. LeBron did not like that at all. So that's Cavs radio. Then after the reversal, Durant makes both foul shots. The game is tied. LeBron scores again with 32.1 seconds left to retake that lead. Steph converts a three-point play to give Golden State a one-point lead again. And then that's when everything got nice. Really, really nice. I'm going to need to spend a whole take on what happened next in regulation. So let me mark that tape right there, and I'll come back to it. Because what I do want to do is skip ahead to something else. I want to skip forward to the end of overtime when this happened.
Livingston will fire with a shot clock winding down with a foul called, I think, on Tristan Thompson. Thompson went at Livingston taking the shot.
Did he just kick him out of the game?
Thompson might have got ejected. Now he and Draymond Green push and shove. And like we mentioned, there wasn't a lot of hostility here in the first 48 minutes. I think Tony Brothers just kicked out Tristan Thompson. If you thought that this one in round four was going to get a little friendlier, a little cooler, you thought wrong. The Warriors lead this game 122-114 with 2 seconds to go.
All hell breaks loose. Tristan Thompson gets a flagrant two. He is tossed. Everybody comes together. There's a scrum, and there's Draymond going Draymond, gleefully celebrating, looking to hook fools, which he did. Thompson then shoved the ball in Draymond's face. Afterwards, Thompson had this to say about what happened.
I mean, Sean's a smart player. He's been in the league for a long time. I played with Sean, so he knows. He knows, but he shot the shot. Maybe he wanted to increase his points per game. I don't know. That was some bullshit, but I just did a contest.
Actually, that wasn't. T, that wasn't. Look, I might agree with you if you said that the call was some bull bleep. But let's be very clear about this now. Shooting the ball before the shot clock expires is not bull bleep. If you want to make the argument that the foul call was bull bleep, I'll listen to that. But shooting the ball was not. Shooting the ball before the shot clock expires is literally what you are supposed to do. This is why it's called a shot clock. And when the shot clock is running, the rule is you have to shoot the ball before the shot clock expires. That's what Sean was doing. Now, I know you might think that he violated some code, but as Livingston explained after the game, the Warriors have their own code. And the code is they never give away a possession like that. They don't just dribble it out. They are not going to take the turnover. Now, you might, somebody else might, but they don't. They don't, and I've got no issue with that. I've got no problem with that. In fact, neither should you, Tristan. You should not have a problem with that, and neither should anybody else, because they were not showing you up. That's what it comes down to. Did they show you up? Did they disrespect you? Did they rub it in your face? No, no, and no. Shooting a mid-range jumper is not rubbing it in. In fact, it's the opposite of rubbing it in. Now, if Sean Livingston had stepped back for a three, or if he drove to the bucket for a dunk, or if he threw up an alley-oop for somebody, then I'd get it. Then I'd be with you. That would be rubbing it in. But shooting a mid-range jumper before the shot clock expired is not rubbing it in. Now, let's break down that call itself. I'm not here to second-guess the refs, again, but I will say, I've got no problem if they just called a regular foul on Thompson instead of a flagrant two. Or even if they didn't bother calling anything at all. Like I said, if Thompson's problem was with the ref and not Livingston, I'm with him. Because there were 2.6 seconds left in overtime. The game was decided. Let it end. Don't drag it out. Do not create a situation for bad blood in game one of a series, which is exactly what they did. And that was only a small part of an epic game. And I haven't even touched on the moment that's going to be talked about and replayed for decades. JR going JR, which I will get to later on. I just want to make sure I set this whole thing up for you. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. All right, something right here. Nathan Shepard was supposed to join me next segment. He is not going to. We'll find another spot for him on the program. But what that means to you is you can call right now. So if you were thinking about getting in early, but you heard that we were going back-to-back with the interviews, we are not. I have an open segment coming up next. Start dialing, 1-800-636-8686. Notice the two things that I didn't lay out in the open, really. JR going JR at the end of regulation and then lying about it, allegedly. LeBron. How pissed do you think LeBron is? If I had to guess, Alvin, LeBron's reaction to what happened last night. This guy's one of the greatest games in NBA final history, and what's he got to show for it? Nothing at all. I wasn't inside the locker room, but I bet it sounded like this. To help prevent crash fatalities, cops are stepping up and they're cracking down on those who do not wear their seatbelts. If you've thought to yourself, I'm not going very far, or I'm in a rush, or seatbelts are just too uncomfortable, then know this. You're putting yourself at the risk of injury or death. There is never a good excuse not to buckle up, because it's always dangerous to not wear your seatbelt when you get behind the wheel of a car. You know the saying. Now make it a household rule to live by. Click it or tick it. When you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're risking serious injury or death. It's a fact. Cops are writing tickets, so don't take the risk. Don't play the odds. Again, let me say it so it sticks. Click it or ticket. Ben Golver is my guest. Ben, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm really good, Jim. Where do we even start with last night's game?
Man, that's the truth, Ben. That's exactly what I was talking about when I started the program. Where do you start, and how do we get it all in? Listen, Ben, you've been in my studio. You've covered the smack off, so that means you've seen some pretty wild things in your life. Have you ever seen anything as crazy, though, as game one of the NBA Finals last night? Why don't we start right there?
No, it's way, way up there in terms of just the, you know, the storylines. I mean, whether it's the overturned call, whether it's J.R. Smith's elementary school mistake, you know, late in the game, not knowing the time score situation. You just go right down the list. I mean, I can understand why, you know, Cleveland fans and, you know, Cleveland's players in the locker room, frankly, walked away from that game just really chapped, you know, and that was their opportunity. They come into this series as basically the biggest underdog in more than a decade, right? And they're looking for any way to generate positive momentum. And you look at LeBron's individual performance. I mean, the most points he's ever scored in a playoff game in his career, 51 points. The first 50-point game in the finals since Michael Jordan in 1993. And it all goes to waste because of an overturned call that, you know, no one's really ever seen on that block charge. And then the J.R. Smith, you know, brain fart where, you know, he's dribbling to nowhere as the clock expires at the end of regulation. That is truly crazy.
Ben Golver joining us. You know, I want to ask you about both those things in a minute, but why don't you stay on LeBron James? I mean, at this point, Ben, nothing this guy does should surprise us or impress us anymore, but how impressed were you with 51 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists against a team that knows him as well as Golden State does?
No, it's getting so difficult to even rank his great moments. I mean, look at his postseason. It's like 40-point game night after night, triple-doubles night after night, game winners against virtually everyone, and then he puts up this 51-point performance. What I did think was a takeaway from game one, though, Golden State really missed Andre Iguodala. We've seen in these previous final series, you know, dating back to 2015, that nobody makes LeBron work, you know, as much as like a Kawhi Leonard as Andre Iguodala does. And when he's out there, you know, just sort of surveying the defense, being able to look over the top of a Steph Curry, or even when he's matched up with Draymond or Kevin Durant, he's still able to get exactly where he wanted. And I guess the biggest surprise from that game, you know, in game one might have been that LeBron didn't go into hero ball mode down the stretch. I mean, he had the opportunity there, you know, even before, you know, J.R. Smith's rebound to essentially decide the game, you know, try to take his own shot, to put his own stamp on it. And instead, he elected to pass the ball to George Hill. It sort of speaks to LeBron's just unbelievable basketball IQ. It was a great pass to Hill. He was cutting wide open to the basket. So it shows you how he's wired. He always has had that Magic Johnson streak to him, and not just Ben Michael Jordan. But you do wonder, looking back, if LeBron could do it over, would he have just held the ball? Would he have tried to get his own shot? Would he have tried to go for the knockout blow there at the end of regulation? I kind of wonder if he regrets that sequence.
Ben Golver joining us. You know, it speaks to his IQ, which is just off the charts. It also, to me, speaks to his patience and the fact that, incredibly enough, he still has confidence, well, at least in that moment, still has confidence with the guys he runs with. Ben, so let's get to the two key points. What do you make of the referees reviewing the charge on Kevin Durant and then flipping that into a blocking foul on LeBron?
That's like the worst possible situation for the NBA on that call, because to me, they got it right in the end, but the process was so convoluted and it will just leave everyone upset. You know, to me, LeBron was still moving, and he argued pretty passionately after the game that he was set. He saw the play develop. He believed he had, you know, taken the charge on Kevin Durant. But when I looked at it, I saw him just drifting to the left a little bit. He wasn't totally set. And to me, the right call in the end was the one that they eventually made. But the reason why it gets so complicated and so confusing is, you know, under the NBA's rules, they're not really supposed to be able to review it like they did. I mean, the only way they can review that call is if he's outside of that, you know, charge circle. I guess they can review it if he's close. And I guess Cleveland's point was LeBron was nowhere close to the circle, you know, the protected circle under the hoop. You know, he was sort of well outside that distance, so therefore they shouldn't be able to review it. And I can completely understand their viewpoint on that, because it wasn't close. I mean, he was way outside, and it kind of seemed like they used the review as a crutch to sort of look at a close call, and that's not how you're supposed to be able to use it. So that's going to be one that really irritates them. And, you know, J.R. Smith said it himself in his post-game comments, that call, that overturned call, got to Cleveland. It got in their head. They were thinking about it, and I think that played a factor, you know, in their meltdown there in overtime as well. I mean, it's really hard to take you know, a situation where you feel aggrieved by the officials, and then you have a brain fart like J.R. Smith did and come back from that mentally. And to me, it was no surprise when Golden State went on that 9-0 run to open overtime, because that's just so hard to bounce back from mentally.
Ben Golver joining us. You're right, Ben, and J.R. is right. That call did get to them, but not nearly as much as J.R. not knowing the scoring situation at the end of regulation got to them. I mean, so when you see him get that rebound at the end of regulation and then do what he did, dribble out the clock, what's going through your mind when you see J.R. go J.R. at the worst possible time?
Yeah, you know, four words are going through my mind: time and score situations. I mean, basketball coaches across the country, I'm sure, are just, you know, telling that to their players, you know, today. Like, it's the same thing you preach to people since, you know, grade school. Since as soon as you teach them what a legal dribble or a proper shooting motion, I mean, it's 101 stuff. You have to know the time and score in late game situation, or really bad things can happen. And it was one of those situations where it really reminded me of like the all-time great sports blunders, you know, whether the infield hit is kind of going through an infielder's legs, or whether a punter is kind of rolling out to nowhere and he's about to get decked and fumble the ball in the open field, whether it's Chris Webber, you know, calling timeout when he doesn't have one. Because as it was happening in the arena, it just unfolded in slow motion. It's like, what is he doing? And then simultaneously, the rest of the arena realizes, oh, he thinks his team is leading, and the last guy to figure it out is J.R. Smith. And unfortunately, he figured it out when it was too late, after the buzzer had already sounded. And, you know, that's a tough situation to be in. I mean, he's obviously had some miscues earlier in his career where, you know, he's taking shots with, you know, certain time left on the clock where maybe he shouldn't be shooting it because he's just, you know, not aware of the moment. I like how the Cavaliers tried to handle the situation after the game, though. You know, Ty Lue obviously wanted to sort of shift the focus towards the referees on the call. LeBron James says, you know, I would never, you know, kind of throw JR under the bus. I'm going to stay with him. But the unbelievable frustration really came through if you watch the replay. You know, LeBron just cannot believe what JR had done. If you look on the weak side of the court, guys like Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green, they've got their palms raised to the sky. They're like, what is this guy doing? And it's just, you don't see that in this kind of a high-pressure moment in the NBA Finals very often.
Look, LeBron may not throw him under the bus, but I've got no problem doing it. And I agree with you, Ben. I love the way that Ty Lue and LeBron responded, but not the way JR responded. I mean, what do you make of JR appearing to say to LeBron right after it happened that he thought that they were ahead, and then after the game claiming that he knew the game was tied?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, is this a tactic, Jim? We see people like put out the alternative facts these days, right? You know, you just kind of throw out multiple different stories to try to confuse people and deflect the blame. I don't really know what he was talking about, because the video clearly said, you know, showed right afterwards that he said, you know, I thought we were up one. Ty Lue comes out to the media and, you know, tells us in the podium that J.R. Smith just thought that they were leading. And then, you know, he gets to the locker room and he's facing all the cameras, and he had a different story where he's trying to explain how he thought the game was tied and he thought his teammates would call timeout, and, you know, he was, you know, trying to pass the ball because, you know, he just, you know, was essentially just trying to extend the game, and you know, none of it really made sense. And, you know, I think for him, that's going to be a really, really hard mental battle to bounce back from. I mean, we've seen him be very streaky, you know, at times, be a huge X factor for Cleveland, you know, even going back to their title in 2016. But we've also seen him go through these crazy shooting ruts where, you know, he might miss like 7 or 8 3-pointers in a game. And, you know, he's sort of been an X factor for them really for their entire run here recently in Cleveland. So not only do the Cavaliers as a team need to bounce back from this mistake, but J.R. Smith individually really needs to bounce back from this mistake. And you can imagine what's going through his head here over the next 48 hours. I mean, that is a really, really tough situation to be in, and I would not wish that on my own worst enemy.
Ben Golver joining us. Ben, let me get your thoughts on Sean Livingston and Tristan Thompson. Now, Livingston explained afterwards that that jumper that he took as the shot clock was running down at the end of overtime was not rubbing it in, but rather it's part of the Warriors' belief that you never give up a possession like that. You don't accept the turnover. Thompson, of course, did not see it that way. What do you make of how that played out?
Look, the Warriors run up the score a lot. This was not one of those cases. This is game one of the finals, hard fought, that was in overtime, and there was still time left on the clock. I mean, to me, you know, Tristan Thompson, again, was just frustrated by what had been a terrible back-to-back sequence there with the, you know, the foul call earlier and then J.R. Smith's mistake. I mean, Cleveland just sort of couldn't believe what had happened to it there in the moment. And I think that's why he was frustrated. I mean, there was nothing wrong with Livingston's shot, you know, sort of by basketball etiquette rules. Cleveland was still playing defense basically on that play. And everything that happened after that, to me, was completely unnecessary. It was kind of funny. I mean, it felt like J.R. Smith lost his mind, and then everybody else on the court lost their minds. I mean, LeBron and Steph are going back and forth. You know, Draymond sort of prancing all over the place and, you know, kind of, you know, revving up the crowd and getting into Tristan Thompson's face. Thompson shoves him for no reason, gets himself ejected. I mean, the whole game just sort of came apart at the seams after that. But I think Livingston was in the clear. You know, I had no issue with that. And I do think, though, Golden State is starting to sort of cultivate this reputation. And maybe they've already done it here for these last couple of years. You know, you look at those shimmies by Steph Curry when they're, you know, in competitive games. The game's not over, and he's sort of celebrating like that. You look at Draymond's antics, how excited he gets, you know, the flexing and all that. I think there is a reputation of sort of arrogance and, you know, they think sort of holier-than-thou attitude emanating out of Golden State that sort of rubs people the wrong way, Jim. And I think this is one more example of that, where a team like Cleveland just says, hey, you know, you guys are beating us. You don't need to go above and beyond. And I thought Thompson overreacted, but I can also see where they're coming from.
Ben Culver joining us. Let's not also forget Draymond taunting Kendrick Perkins with the pom-poms, which I thought was absolutely amazing. All right, so, Ben, where does that leave us from the next game? I mean, with that flagrant two, is Thompson – I mean, is there any chance he gets suspended for game two? And what about Kevin Love for leaving the bench?
Well, look, if there was ever a situation for the NBA to just sweep it under the rug, wouldn't this be it? I mean,
yes.
You have this crazy controversial overturned call where Cleveland's, you know, clearly feeling jobbed by it. I mean, you know, Ty Lue used the phrase robbed. I mean, you don't hear that very often, and that could wind up getting him fined. I wouldn't be surprised on that. But I think this is one where you've got to let those guys play. And, you know, it's for the good of the game. You know, you want a competitive game. I think if you take either Thompson or Love away from Cleveland – That's a much tougher matchup for them in game two. And so if I were them, I would just, you know, kind of let it pass and move forward and run it back for game two.
If the hair on your head has gone gray, run some of the smartest shampoo out there through your dome. Experience Control GX from Just for Men, the first shampoo with a brain. So what makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way it grows in, gradually. The more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you have. Just use it until you like what you see. Now, how smart is that? Smart enough to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. Find Control GX in the shave aisle. That's Control GX. Let me talk about J.R. Smith really quickly. Remember when Bob Myers of the Warriors was on last week? Bob Myers said that essentially that in our lives, there are only a limited number of moments that we'll truly remember once it's all said and done. Hopefully we'll all live long lives, but there's only going to be a few moments that are going to stick out. You know, like a wedding, or the birth of a child, or J.R. Smith's rebound at the end of regulation of Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Now, you think I'm joking. I am not joking. I mean, that was a where-were-you-when moment, because there are only a few of those moments in life. Remember, you're old enough to, or maybe when you're old enough to remember, maybe you're old enough to remember when we landed on the moon. That right there. Last night was another moon landing that big, because last night J.R. Smith somehow knocked J.R. Smith out of the number one spot of the most ridiculous moment in the NBA this year. Somehow throwing a bowl of soup at an assistant coach was no longer the most J.R. Smith thing that J.R. Smith had done all season long, because last night this happened. Now, before I get to it, let me just set the stage as a reset. George Hill had just hit the first free throw. What's that mean? It means the score is tied. That's a really important detail. A very important detail. Knowing that, go ahead and roll it.
It's up. It's short. It's grabbed by J.R. Smith. Smith is going to run it out. I think J.R. didn't know how much time was left. J.R. trying to dribble up near the timeline, and we're going to overtime. Oh, my goodness. I think J.R. thought the Cavs had the lead.
Oh my goodness, Cavs Radio, you're right. I cannot tell you how many times that I have seen that play this morning, and I am stunned still every single time I watch it. Literally the first time in history. It's amazing to me. Literally the first time in history J.R. Smith did not shoot the ball when his teammates wanted him to. The man who's never met a shot that he didn't like did not take that shot. And the thing is, he made an incredible play to get the rebound. He did everything right. He beat Kevin Durant to a board that he had no business getting. Durant could have been the guy getting crucified right now for blowing the box out on JR. Hell, George Hill missing that free throw could be the one catching all that heat right now. How the hell do you miss that throw in that situation, especially after making the first? JR, on the other hand, did everything right. Well, everything except remember the score in situation. It's not very often in life that you see a meme happen right before your eyes, but it did. LeBron's reaction to JR with his arms out, yelling, went viral in an instant. It was amazing. Almost as amazing as the reactions from JR's fellow professional ballers on Twitter. LA Clipper Patrick Beverly tweeted, quote, "Are you kidding me? Hashtag Dumbo." WNBA star Sky Diggins Smith tweeted, "What?" But nobody topped my main man, Joel Embiid. Joel went with, "JR is on that Henny. LOL." Man, Joe is the greatest. That's all. Joe is the greatest. That could end the take right there. Joe is the greatest. An NBA superstar blasting in-game tweets on a peer like that and accusing one of his peers of being on the Henny. It's incredible. It's unreal. Almost as unreal as what JR did, except it's not the first time something like that has happened in his career. I give you this tweet from the legend Frank Isola back in January of 2014 when JR was still a Knick. Quote, J.R. Smith says he thought the Knicks were down two when he took the ill-advised three. Quote, that's bad basketball IQ on me, he said. That was bad basketball IQ on you, Swish. But this was next level. This was galaxy brain compared to that. It's one thing to do it with the Knicks in January. Quite another to do it in game one of the NBA Finals. And to effectively cost your team an incredible shot at winning in the process. And he knew it as soon as it was over. On the replay, you can clearly read his lips. He's telling LeBron, quote, I thought we were ahead. I mean, of course. He thought they were ahead, and he played like it in that moment. He didn't tell us. The fact that he did go out, or the fact that he didn't go for the putback, or didn't call a timeout, or even didn't try to get it to LeBron, ensures what we already knew. He thought they were winning, not tied. Except that wasn't the case later on when he changed his story. After the game, regardless of what he said to LeBron, and regardless of what we already knew, after the game, he said, oh no, I knew exactly what the score was. I knew it was tied.
No, I seen it. I knew it was tied. It's just, I thought it was going to call timeout because I got the rebound. I'm pretty sure everybody didn't think I was going to shoot over Katie right there. So, tie ball game. We had a timeout, and I was trying to get enough space because I obviously Katie was standing right there. Trying to get enough space to bring it out to get it, maybe get a shot off. And then I seen, I looked over at Bron. He looked like he was trying to call timeout, so I just stopped. And then the game was over.
My man's just talking out his backside, right? Oh, and for all you fools who think that he thought that they were ahead, JR's got something for y'all, too.
If I thought we were ahead, then I would have just held on to the ball that was fouled. But clearly that wasn't the case.
Clearly that wasn't the case. Are any of you even paying attention? My man's locked in. He knows what's up. Or he doesn't know it at all and admitted as much during the game and then changed his story by the time he made it back to the locker room. And as you might imagine, you know, the Cavs made the best of the situation. Ty Lue and LeBron were pretty cool about it. So is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, after the game, actually tried to cover for the guy who just gave them the game.
We all done stuff like that on the basketball court, so... You know, I can't talk about a situation that way because I do some dumb stuff on the court. So, you know, I can't really talk about that, but glad we got a W.
We all do stuff like that on the basketball court. If by all you mean just JR and Chris Webber, who of course Twitter dragged into it, I guess you all do it on the basketball court. But I got to respect KD for not crushing JR. Although Steph Curry, even Steph admits he was confused. Quote, we kind of didn't know what was going on at the time. End quote. Now Draymond, on the other hand, was not confused at all. Nor was Draymond looking to let anybody off the hook. Come for his remarks and get to a TV for his facial reactions.
I mean, you got to know the score. That's just kind of basketball. Like, you got to know if you're winning or losing or tie. So, you know, we'll take it. And you know, sometimes it's good to be a little lucky. So, hey, Steve, cool. Here's what it is.
And, Steph, is there any doubt in your mind that J.R. Smith, when he got that rebound and did what he did, thought that his team was ahead in the game? And why?
You have to ask him.
Well, the reason I ask you is because he was in there saying that I knew it was tied, and I was...
Good stuff. I love Draymond. Hey, I mean, Draymond said it point blank. Hey, you got to know the score. You got to know if you're winning, and you have to know if you're losing, and you have to know the score, and maybe we got lucky, and it is what it is. We'll take it. So what was the guy thinking? What was the guy doing? What was going through his head? These are all questions that are unanswerable. Actually, they're all questions that have one answer. J.R. Smith. I'm just glad the dude is on a team that matters. You know, not the Knicks. I'm glad he's on a team that's on a big stage. So when JR does go JR, and he did, and probably will again this week, we'll all be there to see it. And we'll all remember exactly where we were when it happened, even if JR says it didn't happen.
Oh my goodness, I think JR thought the Cavs had the lead.
We're joined by Michael Brockers. Michael, great to have you back.
Hola,
how are you?
Omar, ¿cómo estás? How you doing?
Muy bien. ¿Y usted, Miguel?
I don't know. After that, I'm done. Muy bien.
Está terminado? No problema, amigo. All right. It's all good. Listen, man. Don't try me like that, man. I'm more inteligente. Muy listo. Muy guapo y muy listo.
I see you. Very impressive. Okay. I'm impressed now.
Thank you, man. Good. All right, so you've been back in OTAs. First of all, how does it feel to be back out there once again and going through drills?
Man, it feels good. Honestly, just getting back into it, hanging out with the guys, being in the locker room is kind of like the stuff you always miss. So, honestly, being back and, you know, hanging out with these guys, it's been fun.
Michael, go back 1 year. So to the start of OTAs last year, you were coming off a year where the team had gone 4-12 and you were getting to know a new head coach in Sean McVay. As you look back, you go back 1 year from right now, what sticks out to you the most about that time?
I really think just, you know, buying into the system. We didn't know what we're getting, you know, we didn't know what to expect. So I just remember just buying into everything, you know, Coach McVay was talking about, you know, about being a team, having good character and just, you know, trusting the process. And, you know, we bought in and then, you know, we end up having one of the best seasons I ever, you know, been a part of. So, that's the most thing I remember from last year.
Michael Brock was joining us. And, of course, it wasn't just getting to know Sean McVay. You were also playing for a new D coordinator in Wade Phillips. Now, you and I have talked about him in the past, but what do you remember about meeting him for the first time?
You know, you came in with a great resume. I just wanted to see what kind of guy he was, and you know, got to know him and got to understand. You know, he really trusts his players. He really trusts in what he teaches and trusts us into getting it done. And when you have leaders on the team that also trust in the scheme and what's going on, and leading the young guys, it can go a long way.
You know, that's not just something to say, right, Michael? That's a big, big deal. You've got to have coaches that they want you to buy in, but it's hard to buy in if they don't trust you. How important is it, that trust that you have to have between the coaches and players?
I mean, it starts off with, you know, like I said, just buying into what they're teaching. You know, it was a new scheme. I was kind of worried coming in with, you know, with Coach Wade coaching a 3-4. I didn't know if I was going to be two gapping or what, you know, but he came in and told us, like, you know, we're not going to take your fastball away from you. We want you to keep attacking. We just want to do it from a different angle. So when I found that out, and a lot of guys, you know, found that out, we just enjoyed just learning about it. And we seen, you know, a different aspect of a 3-4 and that we liked.
See, the fact of the matter is, you had a new scheme, but you had arguably the best year of your career in that new scheme. So what was the biggest difference for you from 1 year to the next?
Because the beginning of the season, I started off at nose tackle, you know, and I was doing so well, you know, at nose tackle. I was comfortable playing that. And, you know, and I think around game 5, game 4, we were about to play Dallas. They were like, man, we really need, you know, some outside, you know, present at end, you know, at that strong side end. And I was kind of, you know, I was kind of worried about it. I was like, man, you know, this is mid-season switch. I don't know if I'm going to, you know, be, you know, play up to par. Like, I don't really know the position. I haven't really been, you know, in my playbook, really looking at the plays and stuff for that. So, you know, I think it really showed the trust they had in me to get the job done, you know, and I got in the playbook. Every night I was felt like a rookie again, going over a different position and getting to know it just so I wouldn't, you know, let any guys down.
I appreciate that answer. Michael Brocker is joining us. You know, as a team, you win 11 games in the regular season. You win that division. You host a playoff game. I mean, after going through a number of really challenging seasons, what was it like to see all that hard work finally pay off the way it did?
It was amazing. It was surreal. Just seeing, you know, actually the stadium being packed out with Rams fans, because it's hard to pack that stadium out. I don't think people understand. You could probably fit a million people in there if you really wanted to. And it's hard to pack it out, but that playoff game, it was stacked. And, you know, the atmosphere was perfect. I mean, I never played in a playoff game, but, I just thought it was just perfect. You know, the air, you can just smell it in the air, you know, just, it was just awesome, an awesome experience.
You know how it is with this town, Michael. It's hard to get people to come out, but if you win and you win a certain way, they will. They will come out, and that is a huge building to have to pack. Now, when the whole team takes a huge step like it did last year, it seems like it would be natural to make a couple of small changes or tweaks and say, look, everything's going fine. What we're doing is working. But instead, the front office goes out, and they take one big swing after another. They add Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib, then Ndamukong Suh. So what was your reaction as you watched all of that play out?
This team and the front office really has some cojones, you know. They just want to win now. I think that's what it was all about. You know, we want to win now, not tomorrow. We're not in a building process and, you know, telling people trust the process. We want to win now, as much as we can. So, it just really showed that this team is about winning.
Michael, cojones. Mas Espanol, Buen Palabra, Buen Trabajo. I see what you did there. You snuck some more in. Listen, that defensive line was already nasty with you and Aaron Donald. Now that you have Sue, how much havoc can you guys cause?
You have three dominant players up front. You know, I don't want to, you know, a lot of people already, you know, giving us the throne, and I don't like that because I don't want to buy into the hype. But, you know, if we put the work in that we can and that's due. I think we can go out there and be as dominant as we can. You know, I don't want to put no expectations on us. I just know what we have and the work that could be put in, and we'll see.
Michael Brocker is joining us for a few more moments. And, you know, and then you've got the additions in the secondary too. Look, I know how a great defensive line can make a secondary's life much easier, but what about a great secondary? How does that impact your life on the defensive line?
It just means, you know, with a great secondary, it just means the quarterback Mike's going to have to hold the ball a little bit longer. So that equals sacks. And, you know, the longer the quarterback holds the ball, you know, you give him more opportunity for Aaron to get there, myself or Sue to get there. So it just shows, you got work. It works hand in hand. We say that all the time, you know, rushing cover works hand in hand. And, hopefully we'll see it come to intuition soon.
You know, Michael, there's a little bit of concern or a little bit of attention maybe paid to the fact that Aaron Donald is not at OTAs. What are your thoughts on that? And is there any part of you that's concerned that he wasn't there?
Not at all, man. I kind of been through it last year, and, you know, I understand that, you know, it's a front office thing. You know, it's nothing that, you know, he doesn't want to be with us. You know, it's a thing, you know, going on about contracts, and that's what this game is all about. It's a part of the game. So, I'm not really concerned. I know AD is working. I know what kind of guy he is. He's always in the gym. He's always doing extra work. So I'm not worried about, his work ethic or, you know, is he, you know, being lazy or anything. I know that's not that type of guy. So as long as he comes in and he's been in a year in the playbook and, you know, he just kind of refreshes himself, I think we'll be good.
He was the 14th pick overall back in 2012, a career-high 55 tackles, 4.5 sacks, 4 pass deflections, and the Rams opening up at Oakland September 10th. Michael, it's good to have you back, man. Great to get caught up. I really appreciate it. Gracias, mi amigo.
De nada.
Listen up. Listen good. Today, we have reached a deadline. Today, Friday, June 1st. Is officially the final day to get in your list of demands for this box of chaos. Now, if you've got no idea what I'm talking about, let me reset this very quickly right now. And for the last time, there is no tomorrow. This is it. No tomorrow, not with this thing. Quickly to catch you up, this year I have been nominated to the National Radio Hall of Fame. It is an amazing honor. It means the world to me, and I would love nothing more than for all of us to bust right through those doors together. Now, this particular category that I've been nominated to is put to a listener vote. And I've got to be very clear about this. I'm not about stumping for votes. I'm not about going all self-serving bag with this. But I don't have much choice, do I? It's all coming down to us doing this thing together. And if it is, then damn it, let's do this thing together. It's a listener vote. This is our category. Everybody who's in the category is dealing with the same thing. I'm not making the rules. So many of you are more than willing to cast a vote when the polls open up on this Monday, June 4th, out of loyalty. And I can't say how much I appreciate it. One more thing. I know a lot of you have said, hey, Rome, we've heard it already. How do we vote? You cannot vote until Monday. And then I will tell you exactly how to do it. And a lot of you want nothing in return. And I appreciate it so much. It means a lot to me. However, a lot of you do want something in return. A lot of you are not going to bang that ballot box unless you get something in return. So I have agreed to negotiate the terms of that vote because I need all of your votes. And for the first time ever, and I've said it before, you have the hammer. You have the leverage. And when you've got that hammer, you best swing that hammer. So 2 weeks ago, I started to ask you, all right, then, what do you want in return? What is your price? What's it going to take? What do you want? And I told you to write in or call in or tweet in with your list of demands. You know, like, I'll vote for you, Rome, but only if you do this for me. And I've been keeping track of all of them. They're all going to go into this box right here. Well, all reasonable ones. As you'll find out shortly, not all of them are going in. But they're coming through my email, they're coming through Twitter, they're coming through on the phones. I've written most of them down. They will go in this box. If you're watching on TV, you can see the box. Hey, Hawk, really quickly. Since the box is your idea, since you actually worked up this box, why don't you tell the clones how this particular box physically came to be? Where did you get the box?
I got the box at Joann's.
Talking to the microphone that's on, Hawk. That'd be great.
Sorry about that. I got the box from Joann's. It's a fabric and arts and crafts store next to my house. And I went with my wife, and she spotted the box and said, hey, there's one up there. So I grabbed it, and I had a 60% off coupon at Joann's. So I got the box for $20. I picked up some chalkboard paint. I painted the box, and then I chalked it up with Box of Chaos. That box has two coats on it. And there is paint all over the inside of my house because I forgot to let it dry before I brought it in.
Smart. And you also got that shirt at Joann's Fabrics while you were there, right?
Yeah, this could definitely be from Joann's. This shirt is on...
Could be or is.
Probably is. This shirt's on borrowed time, though. This is my wife's least favorite shirt. She hates it. She wants me to get rid of it, so I'm going to wear it as much as I can before it disappears.
Hawk, we all hate that shirt, but we all hate most of your shirts. So what makes that one so different?
Well, this was my launch shirt.
Stop bringing me down. Go away. That's Adam Hawk, executive producer of the program. Actually, he found the box. It's not a bad effort, Hawk. I have to give you that. That's not a bad effort. He painted it. He chalked it. All of them are going in. I just wanted you to know exactly where he got that box from. Now, and by the way, Joann's is in 49 states, so you probably know that, right? The Box of Chaos is literally from the least chaotic place ever, Joann's Fabrics. So go figure. Anyway... You look right at it. If you're not near a TV, get to my Twitter feed, check out the pic. So, what's inside that box?
What's in the box? What's in the box?
Every one of the demands that I've received that are reasonable are going inside that box. And on Monday, when the polls for the National Radio Hall of Fame officially open up, I will reach in, I will pull out five of them. Not one, not two, not three, not four, five. Five different demands. And the five that I pull will officially become our agreed-upon negotiation. You get all of us into the Radio Hall of Fame with your votes, and I will make good on five of those demands that I pull from the Box of Chaos on Monday. Here is what's in the box so far. Do the wood scopes. You get me in, I pull that one, I will do it. Take a 15-minute nap with Justin from Cleveland in his car. Give up the rapper who hit on Janet. Reveal the dump of a town that my dad took me to on a college visit. Have Hawk take down his stash. Pay for a bust of James Kelly and his five head to sit in studio when he's not there. Bring back the hack off one last time. Chug a beer on air like Tom Brady. Bring back the death pool. Wear Hawk style shirts buttoned up to the top for an entire week. Do another tour stop. Grant a self-gloss Friday. Let Janet co-host a segment. Sweetheart, if you're listening right now, and I'll know in 1 second after I say this because she'll blow my phone up. If I pull that, you're doing it. You and I will co-host a segment. She's been on the show once in 25 years. She will not do it. She hates it. It's going in the box, darling, sweetheart. You will co-host in here with me. Let Alvin co-host a segment. Let Logan co-host a segment. Be the best man at Jeff in San Antonio's wedding. Admit SJP looks like a horse. Bring back the piece of crap list. Make Hawk run a 10K in golf spikes. Take down the goat to a stash. Have James Kelly read mean tweets about his forehead for a segment. Caddy for Adam Hawk for 18 holes. Give us an all O.J. Simpson day. Bring back Triple U for a week. Triple U is not banned. You can use that whenever you want. Make the XR4Ti microwave fish in the control room for one day. Reset the adult alarm. I did that already. Play the Mark Grace Slump Buster interview. Use the Neti Pot live on TV. All right. So now you know what's in the box. Most of that. You have until the end of the show today to add something new and original to the box. You can tweet it to me at Jim Rome. You can email it to me at rome@haveatake.com. Or you can phone it in 1-800-636-8686. But today is the final day to get a demand into the box of chaos, because on Monday I will pull five. And I can't draw yours if you do not submit it. Get to it. It is your last chance. The clock is ticking. Here are some others. Some new submissions. At Charger fan Dan tweets, Box of Chaos, Rome, if and when you get into the Hall of Fame, you and the XR4Ti do a show wearing suits with short pants. I wonder if they have to be matching. Dude, if we ask David August to cut those suits, none of us can afford that. Not for everybody. At Mock Moda tweets, Box of Chaos submission, a brief on-set cameo by Blink-182. Here's the thing. I would love to do it. There are certain things that I might not be able to pull off, certain things that I might not be able to execute. I don't know. And those guys did a cameo once on my set for the last word for a video. I'm not sure that I can get those guys to pull that off here. And especially walking through the set naked like they did. You know the background on that? When we talked about that, I said, no, wait, bros, are you really going to go naked? They're like, no. We'll just go skin suits. I'm like, oh, cool. And then we went to do it that day. They were hanging out. Full naked. People, that was not acting. That face that I made was legit. I did not expect it. That was not some skin suit. Those guys were letting it all hang out. It's pretty amazing. Randall, WFI in the OC, tweets, lift the restraining order. Yeah. Hashtag box of chaos. You know what, Randall? If you and the clones get me in terms of that restraining order being lifted, no! Yeah. At Radom 27 tweets, box of chaos, a show where you read all Najee resets. Hey, Radom, in a word, no! Yeah. You know why, Radom? I'd like to keep this job. Najee Davenport resets for 3 hours. Nathan Shepard. Nathan, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Nathan, great to talk to you. I was looking forward to it. Listen, I would normally start our conversation by talking about what it's like to get a phone call from the Jets telling you that they were going to draft you. But for people to really appreciate what went into that phone call, we've got to go back even further. For instance, you're from a town outside of Toronto. So growing up, how did you first get involved in football?
All right, so yeah, I was grew up Ajax Pickering area, GTA out of Toronto. Basically, there's a lot of sports I played. Football just kind of stuck with me. Originally, there was an episode of the Bernie Mac show. I don't know if you're familiar with
sure.
it.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Where basically Bernie Mac's nephew, Jordan, tries out for the football team, kind of in order to impress his uncle. And, you know, I had Jordan was a character that I really, you know, felt I connected with just because we were both kind of scrawny, kind of nerdy, even kind of looked the same, glasses, everything like that. So it really kind of spoke to me. And ever since I saw that episode, definitely been trying to play football since then.
I'm telling you, this story is getting better already. Now, when you talk about being kind of scrawny and kind of nerdy, the story goes you were a 205-pound linebacker in high school, and then you started to play in college in Vancouver. So what was college football like for you?
College, it was a big step up. I had a lot of things were changing, definitely for me. Originally, I had played linebacker in high school. So, again, I was around 6'1", 205. Needed to switch positions, just my body type and the other athletes that were available, I needed to play defensive line. So I was playing defensive end my redshirt freshman year, and, you know, it was, you know, baptism by fire just because I was undersized and not familiar to the position.
Nathan Shepard joining us, and that was far from the only challenge. You were on a partial scholarship, but then finances became tight, so you had to step away to earn some money. That meant working in a plant nursery and doing work in electrical construction. What were those jobs like?
Those jobs were definitely really tough. Basically, I was trying to support myself as an athlete and then save up. So you got to pay for your food. You got to pay for your training. You also got to save up. So definitely a lot of work with time management. And then there were physically difficult jobs, like the plant nursery was out in the hot sun, you know, beating down on you. That drains on you. But then at the end of the day, you still got to go work out. Electrical construction, again, you're lifting heavy materials, physically demanding job. It was just kind of will to succeed really just kind of took over.
Nathan Shepard joining us, and that's not all. Now, you also worked in a cardboard box factory, and you worked from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and then you would switch to the graveyard shift every couple of weeks. I mean, that is brutal work. Those are brutal hours. What was that experience like?
You know, one thing I kind of learned when I was working is that I didn't want to do this for the rest of my life. So, you know, I decided, you know, every time I kind of went to work, I knew it was one less time I'd have to go there because I was going to get closer to playing football again. The cardboard, working at the printing factory, stacking the cardboard boxes, that was luckily my last job that I took before I was back into football. And, yeah, so basically, if you got to work the graveyard shift, you got to either work out before or after. That's what I would do.
All right, so in terms of that, you never gave up on the dream, and you had to work out. At the same time, as you're grinding out like that, you're still staying in shape. You were doing 1,000 push-ups a day during your breaks and staying focused on getting back to football. I mean, what was it about football that made you feel like this was something that you just could not let go of, that you had to continue to grind and pursue it?
You know, I felt I was blessed. I definitely felt I was blessed with a lot of abilities, just looking at my body and how it was filling out. Also, it was just something that I couldn't really forget. You ever see something at the mall and maybe you're thinking about purchasing it and you're like, ah, we'll see. But you still keep thinking about it, and you're like, dang, you know what? If I'm thinking about this much, I just got to stick with it. I just got to go ahead and buy it. That's kind of what it was with football on me. And I just didn't want to grow older and kind of have a doubt saying that I didn't give everything I could. So basically I was like, whatever I got to do to play ball for as long as I'm eligible or as long as I have the opportunity, do it at the best of my ability, and I'll be happy with whatever outcome I have.
New York Jet, Nathan Shepard, my guest. Now, your trainer, Paul Watkins, would send you messages, and one of them was, quote, the day you decide not to do 1,000 push-ups is the day you decide you no longer want to go pro, end quote. What did that message mean to you? Like, how did that resonate and motivate you?
Well, again, I think personally I took it. It was more, didn't just have to deal with push-ups. I really don't think he was talking specifically about push-ups. He was talking about whatever it took to be successful, because there's a lot of different moving parts and a lot of things you have to do more than just push-ups, obviously, with football. So I think he was just trying to instill in me that everything you have to do to, you know, pursue your craft, keep on it and be persistent and continue to water your craft and nurture it, because, you know, the day you stop doing that is the day it stops growing.
Nathan Shepard is my guest. So that's exactly what you did. You stayed on that thing. You never lost focus. You did everything you could to get back on the field. And then in the spring of 2015, you were offered a chance to walk on at Fort Hays State University in Hays, Kansas. What did you know about that school before you arrived there?
That it was in the middle of nowhere, literally.
Right.
There's not much around it. It's about 250 miles. Away from anything, really, Denver and Kansas City on either side. I did know that they were graduating 4 senior defensive linemen, and they had money for scholarships, so I kind of bet on myself, took my savings, paid my way my first semester, and I was put on scholarship for 2015 in the fall season.
That's amazing, right? And then your head coach, Chris Brown, said that during your first spring there, he knew that there was something special. There was a day where the team was practicing and not very well, and he made the team do jump tucks. Everybody ended up doing 400, which is pretty nasty. You said to your teammates, quote, "I did not come to Fort Hays State University to do jump tucks. I came here to win." What do you remember about that day and that experience?
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
That is hilarious, because everyone from that era, like, I'm quoted for that all the time. It's so funny that you say that. I guess they were kind of astonished or taken back because, again, that was probably the first few weeks I was with the team. No one really knew me. And I kind of just stepped into that role because I understand now, looking back and having gone through the program for 3 years, that, you know, coaches will do things to test us mentally. Jump tucks was one of the things. At that moment, I was like, we're supposed to be playing football. Why are we struggling in a workout? Because jump tucks was like a punishment if people weren't showing effort. I was like, why aren't we showing effort? Why is that even an issue? We don't coach effort. You give effort, we coach football.
And listen, the coach himself, he was not upset that you said that. In fact, he said it was a turning point. He said, quote, "He is the dude. Everybody here looks up to him." But at the same time, even in this whole period, Nathan, money is still tight, and you're still grinding. I mean, you're working the concession stand at sporting events. You're working security at basketball games. You're working as a bouncer. And I love this part of it. You were rolling around in a 1993 Ford Tempo, but it got severely damaged in rains, so you had to get a new car. Your new car was a 2006 Ford Focus that now has 175,000 miles. Faded gold, missing a hubcap, and Coach Brown called it, quote, "the worst car of any kid on campus." That's amazing. I got to ask you, tell me about the car.
I guess Coach can say that now. But, yeah, you know, it was wasn't a luxury vehicle. It was a A to B vehicle. You know, helped me out, got me around town, got me around to my jobs, really.
Dude, I love that. It was an A to B vehicle, not a luxury vehicle. I mean, did you drop a name on this thing? Tell me you named that car.
Which one? Oh, my gosh. What did I name it? Oh, my. Give me a car. I think it was Carl. Carl was the first one. I don't know why. It just stuck with Carl.
Oh, dude. Carl is great. All right. So after all this work, I mean, the box factory, the nursery, all the jobs you did away from the field, the commitment, never giving up on that dream. I said that normally I would start the interview with, what's it mean to get a call from the Jets? That question would not have worked unless we talked about all this. What did it mean to get the call from the Jets that they were drafting you? What was that moment like after the price you had paid?
It was a dream come true. It was definitely a dream come true. And it taught me a few things, definitely. And hopefully I'll be able to show an example of what I can do and inspire others. But basically, what I got from it is, you know, sometimes you're going to work hard in life for something, and it's not going to pay off with a paycheck. It's not going to pay off with a pat on the back. It's not, you might not see any of the progress right now, but if you give up on it, you'll never see it at all. So, I mean, for me, getting a call from the Jets, not only was it the ability to pursue my dreams, but it was also felt like back pay for everything I had done years and years ago. There's a lot of things I had to do that were not football related to be here to play football, working a job wasn't football related. That didn't help me become a better football player. Saving my money didn't help me become a better football player, but it put me in a position so that I could be a pursue football.
Nathan Shepard, my guest. I got to finally ask then, are you still rolling A to B? Do you still have that Ford Focus, or did you upgrade and get a new rig?
We are, the Ford Focus is still in commission. eventually there will be an upgrade at, I don't know what time that'll be, but you know, I'll be grateful for when that time does come.
My man, much respect and much appreciation. That is an amazing story. You did a great job telling that story, and I think you got a lot of new fans and a lot of new friends listening right now. Nathan Shepard, the 72nd pick overall. Nathan, really nice to meet you and great to have you on the show. Hope we can do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't wait.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. It is good to be back.
You know, I can't kill that cold.
I turn the corner, but that thing will not die.
Can't be bargained with.
Do not get that. Kids, slam vitamin C. I wasn't in on Friday. I was not in on Monday. So if you want to get caught up on something, you know where to find
me. Definitely can find
Houston, the ultimate kick in the junk.
Yeah!
The Golden State
come with the king.
You best not miss.
Houston missed. 0-27. You have to finish them, because if you don't, they will find a way to finish you. And that's exactly what Golden State did. Tom Haberstroh is my guest.
Man. And my cell phone was lit up, Jim, saying, wow, wow, the Warriors are done.
And I just kept telling everybody, like, just wait, we just saw this happen in Game 6.
It's about LeBron freaking James. Boston ran into a bad stretch of shooting, but even worse than that, they ran into LeBron. And that was only going to have one outcome, and that was LeBron with an Eastern Conference champion's hat again. My guest is Kevin Weeks.
Man, I'll tell you one thing. It was shaking outside, and it was shaking inside T-Mobile Arena. I felt like the wind was shaking. This is G-Money, Rakneef James.
All right, Dave, see you, bud. Wait a minute, G-Money? He just went self-taught.
Do you remember Hideo Nomo? It's like when you face him for the first time.
Got him!
Strike three, call. Where did the ball go? It's in the catcher's glove.
Zach Goldich is my guest.
I always tell people, you know, if this were to happen to anybody, you know, I'm kind of glad it happened to me. If some person can pull one thing away from my story, it makes it all worth it.
Back-to-back, dot
oh,
jobs,
all well,
the same guy.
Oh, my gosh, this is
poor dude.
Your record.
Yeah, I think you're pretty safe in saying that's a record. I mean, do you really think a guy like that accomplished, would take the time to set up five burner accounts?
Follow me on Twitter.
Kill his own players and defend his callers on his shirts? Yeah. Jeff Passan.
Almost every general manager that I know has a burner account, but he's not stupid enough to actually go tweet from
email.
It. Hey, Brian Colangelo, five words for you. I found out about you. Sucker for 90s alt-rock, you know that. Chris Mara.
There's not a lot I can do about it, I can tell you that, because I don't really have much say in what's going on with the horse. I just have to make sure the check clears. So he sat there and had a Tito's or two with me. Said, you're in.
Chris, is that your poison of choice at the track, Tito's?
Yes, it is.
I had wondered. I ought to start getting a sports magazine.
Well, I would recommend Sports Illustrated and the second magazine that I subscribe to, and it's only because I can't figure out how to kill it, ESPN. That comes from my mailbox and goes right into my garbage can. Bob Myers.
Dude, what's the football guy that left tickets for Elvis?
Glanville.
Yeah, should I just leave a ticket for Jim Rome? Like, I will call for all these games, and just if you show up, you show up. You want me to do that for you?
How about two for every single game?
Two for me!
Hey, seriously, if you want to come, let me know.
And we call back, and we ask for another king. Response was, you know, Gretz would like to come back on. Is that okay?
My friend Jim Rome, we got the karma going.
My reaction was, that's okay. Kyle Williams.
And I knew that my game would match up, and I knew that hard work would carry me over the top and make sure that I was able to stick and get the job done. Here we are, 13 years later.
We get you into the Hall of Fame. We want our station back in Denver.
You need to know the rapper who hit on Janet, and we'll get you in the Hall of Fame.
Good night, Vegas, the Washington
Capitals! An incredible
Capitals.
Start to the final, and the best thing about Washington winning last night is we are now guaranteed at least three more games of that. Nasal irrigation, yo. I want to hear from Netty Nation. It works, doesn't it? I'm like, damn. Wife, you got really aggressive on that thing. The family that netties together stays together, I guess. We're talking to Brian Scalabrine.
Everyone talks about, you know, when you get knocked down, like, pull yourself back up, right? That's like the slogan for everybody. The ones that impress me the most are the ones that succeed and, like, continue to push the next year.
Silk Bra is one of my favorites. Love that guy. Seems like the kind of guy you want to drink rosé with and hang out with.
Bruh. I'm RSVPing for the smack off. Come on.
Come on.
No. That was not silk.
What if he's telling Philadelphia he's interested in signing with them by attempting to look like a Quaker?
Dan, golden ticket denied. Chris Dolman is my guest.
Jim, I don't know who today can afford health care. There's one product that I use. That's $21,000 a month. That's a lot of coin a month.
Personal foul, LeBron James.
Wow. LeBron did not like that at all. Well, then that's when everything got nice.
Going to run it out. I think JR didn't know much.
Ben Golliver is my guest.
JR Smith, Rain Fart. Four words are going through my mind. Time and score situation.
Box of Chaos.
From Joann's. It's a fabric and arts and crafts store next to my house.
And a tramp stamp that says property of Janet.
We're joined by Michael Brockers.
¿Cómo estás? How you doing?
Muy bien. ¿Y usted, Miguel?
I don't know. After that, I'm done.
Muy bien.
Oh, my goodness. I think JR thought the Cavs had the lead.
Throwing a bowl of soup at an assistant coach was no longer the most J.R. Smith thing that J.R. Smith had done all season long.
Hey, Rome, guess what?
What, Chad?
Chicken butt.
LeBron's hairline pubic stub.
Jim, good to talk to you, my friend. Have a good one.
Blue shirt day. Alvin can. Alvin, you can. Imagine me coming back and Alvin's giving away like 30 of them.
I'm looking forward to the smack off and see you next month.
I'm available for you anytime you want to.
Gracias, mi amigo.
Good.
Your show has become my new reality show.
I want to hear from somebody who rocks the netty. No, actually.
Hey, what a bet, punk? Good night now! Good night now!